You're listening to the Big Film Buffet Snack Edition, where we talk about the things in popular culture that we are frickin' obsessed with. My name's Alexi Toliopoulos, and joining me, as always, is my dearest friend, Jen Fricker.
I'm your dearest friend?
Yes, it is official. Of all my friends, you are officially number one dearest.
Well, my official statement at this point is, if you're listening and you think you're Alexi's friend, absolutely suck it.
Yes, you may be my friend, but you do not hold the dearest position.
Yeah.
You are ranked bottom tier currently, all my friends out there.
Absolute grubs. Anyway, Alexi, I'm really excited about this week because we have a friend joining us in the stew, which is short for studio.
Yeah, we're in the stew room right now,
we're
guys.
We're in the stew room. We're cooking up a stew on the buffet. Because last week, you might have heard us chatting about one of our favorite movies of the year so far, The Mitchells versus the Machines. If you haven't seen it, it's out on Netflix now. We went into it a great big deal last week. Have a listen if you haven't. But the essential kind of plot line of the movie is it's about a family trying to make a road trip while the end of the world is happening because of a robot apocalypse. Basically, AI takes over the world and is trying to enslave mankind. And I was thinking about it and I was like, this is a fun, delightful family movie, but also is an existential assault.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've seen a lot of movies about robots turning against humans. And I was thinking, like, how likely is it that something like this could happen? And, you know, both you and I, Alexi, we're cuties, but we're not smart.
yeah, that is true. Let the record be known. We are cute as heck, but we are not smart as heck.
Yes. And so we thought we'd bring in an expert in the field of artificial intelligence, robots and whatnot, and also just a lover of animation and cartoons generally. Dr. Matt Agnew, hello.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
It's an absolute delight to be here.
So you've had a chance to check out The Mitchells versus Machines.
I have. You're absolutely right. Lover of science, lover of cartoons, lover of fun, silly movies. And I thought this hit on everything, really. It was a really enjoyable watch.
Made for you, in fact, in mind.
Absolutely, yeah. So I was, thrilled to have that recommendation come through.
Dr. Matt Bate, for sure. But because, this is how my brain is wired, it instantly made me feel extremely fearful that this could happen. And you're writing a book on robotics at the moment. Is that right?
Not quite. I'm writing a book on aliens.
Oh, whoa.
I'm studying robotics, studying artificial intelligence. Wow. Yeah, so there's several things going on, but that's combining two of them.
The Mitchells vs. Machine is about robots turning against humans. Dr. Matt, how likely is it? Should we all be throwing our phones away?
There's some people who would argue that, yes, you should be throwing your phones away for different reasons. I think, obviously, sci-fi and certainly in this, the common kind of robot uprising is very much a robot uprising, right? It's the Terminator. You know, it's coming to get you and, in this case, you know, lock you away in this ship to launch you off the planet. But I think in terms of the way AI can be misused, there's definitely a lot of ways, such as has been seen, you know, in the recent, I guess, echo chamber type effect in social media and things where you can see kind of democracy kind of having some issues where, you know, elections seem to sway in certain ways, and that's because, like the Cambridge Analytica saga, there's ways that people are realizing data can be extrapolated and exploited in ways, and a lot of that is based around artificial intelligence and machine learning. Is a robot uprising likely? Maybe not in the Terminator way, but certainly there's ways that it's kind of starting to destabilize things for us a little uncomfortable way. But I think we're still in control at the moment.
Oh, God. My Lord. Oh, God.
I don't know how much control we have because I recently got a Google Assistant, you know, the OK Google. And every morning I wake up, I'm like, OK Google, what's the weather today? And 9 times out of 10, it just reads me the dictionary definition of what the weather is.
Yeah.
So is that thing effing with me? Am I getting freaked out? Or
I think that's exactly right. When we talk about artificial intelligence today, it's still kind of, I don't want to say primitive because it is very sophisticated stuff.
Yes, wow.
But you're right. It's kind of still clever algorithms doing things to kind of create the illusion of intelligence.
It's throwing me off.
It's throwing you off. So you've asked for the weather and it's got a series of steps or a recipe to follow, and then it spits out this thing.
I'm sweating.
So, yeah. Yeah, why do I feel like this is going bad? Like things are on a turning point. I mean, we've seen it a lot in movies, like Ex Machina. I know, ooh, Lexi, that's one of your faves.
I do like that movie a lot. That is a freaky deaky sci-fi thriller movie where two fellas talk to a robot android humanoid character with artificial intelligence, and slowly that artificial intelligence manipulates them, makes the man fall in love with it. Is that possible?
I love this movie. This is one of my favorite movies as well. I was thrilled that you've brought this up. And I think it brings up one of the really interesting things that we probably never even think about, which is the fact that when we do actually create artificial intelligence and when we do actually create something smarter than us, they're going to already be several steps ahead. They won't let on that they're smarter than us. They'll kind of play dumb almost.
Yeah.
Like Alexi's Google assistant?
Oh, well, that's Lord. It. You could be in real trouble right now, Alexi.
You say this is a tub of flirtation that I'm experiencing.
She's negging you.
Oh, no. It's working. It's absolutely working. Yeah.
And we've all kind of started to be the recipient of this kind of artificial intelligence manipulation and exploitation in social media and targeted marketing and all of this. And it's like, are we just starting to scratch the surface? Are we all going to fall in love with robots and get, you know, have these horrible things happen? Is this the way we're going?
Oh my God.
I think part of like that Ex Machina one that's like kind of scary, but also like big part of like science fiction is like that idea of like what is human. And in this one, we're seeing like this android like have this level of like self-determination, like beyond self-awareness. It's like embodying a real human, to use the term soul or something. Like it brings about those questions. Do you think that is something that we're heading towards, like the idea of self-determination and like artificial intelligence?
I think, kind of moving in this direction of, self-awareness, sentience, consciousness.
Yeah.
I think this is something that still really eludes us. And as I said, a lot of the intelligence at the moment is very much clever algorithms. It's all about creating the illusion of intelligence or very, very focused goals such as, you know, AlphaGo, something that can beat humans at alpha, or the Deep Blue that beat Kasparov at chess. You know, they have very, very narrow focus, and it's all clever algorithms to solve these problems better than humans.
Yeah.
But I feel like, there is this kind of missing ingredient that's like, what is it that is different between our brains doing these kind of things algorithmically and then that step towards sentience and consciousness? And there seems to be a missing piece to the puzzle, and I think we'll probably get there eventually. I think the brain is essentially just firing of neurons and flowing electricity. At some point, surely we could build, you know, a clever little rock that can do the same thing.
Could the missing ingredient perhaps be love?
Look, this is I mean, they touch on this in the movie, right? Yeah. You know, why should we be preserved? And I think that's kind of often the trope in sci-fi, right? Which is, you know, this is the thing that machines are missing. Mm. It's this love. And I think The Matrix has done it when they kind of had that element with
the
second one.
Makes me cry every time.
It's really tugging on the heartstrings. Yeah. But there's a book, Yuval Noah Harari, and his second book, Homo Deus. He kind of starts touching on this in a little more detail. And at the end of the day, you know, things like love and emotions and feelings and all of this, it all kind of boils down to, again, just neurons and electricity. And it's, can we create algorithms that simulate these kinds of things? And
film-wise, it's explored in the movie Her as well, where I guess the robot falls in love back with the human, as opposed to Ex Machina, where it's kind of more one-sided.
Yeah, it's more a natural love.
Yeah. I mean, again, a natural
love. Oh, I'm so sorry, guys.
So Ex Machina was natural, right?
Very normal, very cool.
Yeah, very cool. But Her is like reciprocated, right? Mm. Do you think that is like, in Ex Machina, the feelings are more like it's self-determination for survival. But Her, it's like, that's a more natural feeling that a AI would have of like, to feel those emotions as well, like rather than just survival, which is like more primal instinct.
Yeah, can we make an algorithm that feels emotion?
I think this is a fascinating one. I haven't seen Her for a while now, so I'm probably a bit rusty. But
he's got a moustache.
I recall that. Yeah, exceptional facial hair.
Yeah. Great outfits.
Yeah.
But the thing that kind of came up there is, I guess she was designed as like an assistant or an OS type,
like a Google assistant. Yeah, perhaps.
Kind of, yep. I mean, we're back into Alexa's kind of, you know, Google flirt. Territory again. But I guess that's kind of what they're tapping on, is that if we do code these things, how much of this, once we get the ability to, I guess, simulate or create algorithmically a sentience or consciousness or self-awareness, how much, I guess, would that emotion and those abilities to love and feel and all of that kind of cascade out naturally.
Oof.
From that sentience, just as it has in humans, and not knowing exactly the designer's intent in her. But, you know, I'm sure that wasn't the goal, was to design this kind of, you know, potential relationship and pleasure robot. But, you know, that's what's
come out. Can we ban the word pleasure
out.
From this?
Yeah, no more pleasure
from this
talk.
Point, a veto on pleasure robot as a phrase.
Kind of where it feels like where we are at now from what you're saying is a more like a 2001 Space Odyssey situation with like the HAL artificial intelligence on the ship, with its like main goal being like this mission that supersedes everything, even beyond like human life. That's the goal, is the mission. Is that something that is happening now?
I think this kind of stuff comes up a lot when we think about, you know, the first law of robotics in terms of the Asimov laws, right?
A robot may not injure a human being or through an action allow a human being to come to harm.
Mm-hmm.
Robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And the third law is a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws.
Yeah, so I think this kind of idea of instilling in robots this sense of protection and looking after us is something that we need to get right the first time, because once we create something smarter than us, that's it. It's game over. That can continue on ad infinitum and get smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter. So we have one shot at getting it right. And I think this comes up in sci-fi a little bit about whether or not, you know, robots or machines, if we think about software at its basis level, will follow exactly the instructions it's given. And so it's a case of, well, if we give it an instruction, such as in 2001 A Space Odyssey, such as follow this mission, how much will it follow this mission to the detriment of other humans?
Yeah.
And this is, yeah, kind of where these Asimov laws come in, and hopefully that kind of prevents anything happening. But there's these kind of really interesting things, such as, imagine if you were like, okay, I want to protect all humans, so let's instill in this robot, your goal is to maximize human happiness, right? On average, human happiness, living quality or something like that. And you think that's going to kind of ensure that all humans are looked after.
Yeah.
But what this robot does is go, oh, right, well, basically, on average, if I want to have the maximum happiness, all I need to do is find the happiest human and kill everyone else.
Oh, my
word. Now I've maximized human happiness. Because on
the
average,
sample area
the sample
smaller.
Is now just that one, you know, tremendously happy human.
My lord.
And so as far as it's concerned, you know, mission accomplished, goal achieved. Even though for us as humans, except for this one lucky individual, we're gone. So it kind of highlights, and this is what 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of touched on, is that these missions could be misconstrued by robots. They're going to follow them exactly as they need to follow them and not kind of consider these nuances such as, you know, don't kill humans to then maximize this other function, you know?
My God, I got to tell you, just put a tingle through me.
I know. Oh, this is Lord. Maybe the spookiest episode of the pod so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, look, I know you're the doctor, you're the scientist, but I did some preliminary panic scrolling.
Wow.
And I found something called Rocco's Basilisk. And I think it's going to break Alexi's heart. Do you want to explain it?
Okay. Is it a type of lizard?
That would be far less doomy, I guess the word.
Oh, my word.
Sure.
I have a tear in my eye already. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I love the whole concept of Rocco's Basilisk. And it is truly terrifying.
It
so
sounds
much.
Like a board game, by it the is, way, as yeah, well.
It's a bit like The Ring, right? Watching
oh,
the video.
Oh, my gosh.
Once you've
my
heard it.
My scariest movie.
Yeah, is it? Okay,
because
well.
It's about physical media being corrupted by evil.
Oh, right.
That's the thing I care about most
oh,
in this
yeah,
world.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Alexi has a lot of DVDs and videotapes. And the idea that one of them would turn on him
oh,
is heartbreaking to
yeah,
him.
Strap yourself in. Here
oh,
we go.
My
so
gosh.
The whole thing is once you've heard this, you're in. You're,
okay.
You're,
so this
you're
is a warning. If
this
you don't want to be part of this now, then turn off the podcast.
Okay, turning it off. See you later, guys.
So the idea of Rocco's Basilisk is that at some point in the future, when we do reach the singularity, which is the idea of creating something with human level and exceeding human level intelligence. This will create this kind of intelligence explosion, will create this artificial super intelligence, which will be essentially godlike, right?
Wow.
And the whole premise of the Basilisk is that for it to becoming into existence, it can then now kind of, you know, do a lot of things and make things better for us. So if it doesn't come into existence, that's kind of bad for everyone, including humans, because it can't look after us. It's quite benevolent in that respect. So what it will do is essentially try and figure out, well, who didn't help it come into existence? And if you didn't help it come into existence, it will essentially torture you for all eternity.
Whoa.
And the way that works is that in the future, once it comes into existence, it'll be like, right, well, I'm going to run some simulations and I'm going to simulate you, Alexei, and see, did you help to make the basilisk come into existence?
Yep.
And if you didn't, it'll be like, right, well, now I know that you didn't help, so I'm going to torture you.
I'm crying.
Okay.
Let me not have tears.
Now, there's two scenarios happening right now. Mm-hmm. Either you're not in the simulation, so you're in real life right now.
Me, yes.
Which your decision now to help make the basilisk exist is what your simulation self will happen.
Yeah.
So when the basilisk is created, it will simulate and it will... depending what you do now, say you don't help create it, your simulation self won't. So when we create superintelligence, it's going to torture you.
Okay.
Or you are the simulation self, in which case if you don't help the basilisk come about, then your real self is going to get tortured.
Wow. Okay.
So essentially it's from the future blackmailing you to help create the basilisk. Otherwise you face eternal torture and damnation.
So your Google assistant...
my God.
You can either take back all the shit you said about her at the beginning of the podcast and hope for your future soul, digital or otherwise. Or from this point, you've just made yourself an enemy of the robot state.
Because you know about this now.
So
now
about it.
Anything you don't do to help the coming about of an artificial superintelligence, it will see as you failing in your duty.
My lord.
The robot god will know.
Oh, no, no.
The most frightening thing is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a malicious AI. It can be really benevolent. Its whole thing is, I want to make humans' lives better.
Yeah.
But for me to do that, I have to exist. So if you don't bring me into existence, you're making human lives worse. So I'm going to threaten you with this existential blackmail in the future.
Wow.
And if you don't fulfill this, then you will face eternal torture.
Alexei looks
lost. I'm spun out. I'm in a tizzy currently.
It's the first time I've ever seen your gorgeous hair a bit rumpled.
Yeah, I flushed it. I didn't even touch it. It just frizzed out.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to say all praise the basilisk. Love you, brother. Love you like a mother. And I praise the basilisk. I will say right now to the basilisk, if you are listening, if you are my master, I will be your movie expert forever.
Yeah.
I will watch every movie and I will incorporate that into your brain so you can manipulate humans using the motions that they put into movies. This is me literally pleading. I've thought of how I can be of worth to the basilisk using the early skills I have and to survive in this world and to not be tortured. I want to eat a steak and I want it to be real, okay?
Yeah.
I want it to always close to real and pleasurable as possible. Sorry to use the forbidden word one more time. Yes, basilisk, I'm your mate, okay? I promise you that.
I mean,
I'm selling you out. I'm bootlicking the little Ethernet cables that its feet are made out of right now.
I mean, I guess we can all start worshipping the basilisk by just like putting a thumbs up on the Mitchell versus machines.
Yeah, exactly. Get on Netflix, give it a high rating on Netflix. Recommend it to a friend.
Yeah.
Just really loved Olivia Colman's Power Cat. Lovely and, you know, compassionate, empathetic. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Wonderful leader and boss that should totally look after and control our world.
This is a devastating episode of the podcast.
My God.
Thank you so much, Dr. Matt, for coming by and absolutely ruining our lives.
Absolutely. I think it's time we close those podcast doors, Hal. That's all I got to do.
Yeah.
I've lost it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, except for potentially ruining your days.
I wish I could say it was a pleasure, but you know, great to meet you, buddy.
See you all in the robot apocalypse. Oh, my God. This is a nightmare. This is the most... horrifying.
The world
episode.
Is heinous.
Either we're in the simulation or we're not, and both are equally terrifying.
Yeah.